We are Pro Cannabis Media.
All right, welcome back to the second hour of Green Rush Live here at the world headquarters of Pro Cannabis Media, Clinton, Massachusetts. And if you don't know where Clinton is, just ask Google. It's in Massachusetts. It's a long way away from where Josh is talking to us. And now we're going to bring in Doug Miller from New Jersey as well. Hello, Doug. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you today?
Very good. Tell us a little bit about your adventures in cannabis in New Jersey, because as I continue to chit chat with you, I find out more and more. And for, to me, the most impressive thing is you're an accomplished chef.
Yeah, I went to culinary school right after high school. I graduated from the Philadelphia Restaurant School. My last chef job, I was fortunate. I worked for the NFL. I used to be a chef for all the talent that does all the TV shows. And that was the job that I said, you know what, this is an awesome chef job, and I'm going to make it my last one, and I'm never going to clock in and out of another job again. And I stuck to my word. So it's been great. But yeah, I was a chef for over a decade, and I worked at some nice places and exclusive country clubs, the NFL. So I had fun.
Now, are we ready to do infused cooking, Doug?
Well, I've been doing infused cooking well over 20 years. So it's just comes natural to me. I was making brownies 20 years ago. And then how I really got into the cannabis industry big is, unfortunately, my mom had colon cancer. And she was actually one of the first 100 patients in New Jersey with the cannabis license back then in 2015-16, right when it started. The dispensary is right around the corner from my house. There was just one. It was Compassionate Science. Now it's called Cure Leaf, and there's tons of them everywhere. But I had the caregiver card very early, so I knew all the recreational laws and where the medicinal laws and everything. And I was making my mom's food with butter, obviously, and it did help. She would tell the doctors it was the only thing that helped, and she was pretty much anti-cannabis her whole life, never drank, was very healthy. She had Crohn's really bad, and it just developed in the colon cancer. And unfortunately, she passed. And then after she passed, I said, you know, it really helped her big time. So let me take it to the next level. And I started messing with extractions and other things. And I've gone on. I made an oil that stops seizures. So I work with doctors all over the country. And I'm more than happy to send it to anybody. It's just something that helps. And it's awesome that it even works. So I've been doing a lot of different things. And I just love the industry inside and out.
Yeah. It really is amazing. The people that you meet at these trade shows, and Josh, by the way, is going to MJ BizCon in Las Vegas in a couple of weeks. And I wrote my dear Chris letter today and told him that I would not be making the trek to Vegas this year. And I'm disappointed, but I will get to see my son and still teach my class. And it's that Wednesday that if I could just snap my fingers and show up there and then snap my fingers and get back, that would be great. It ain't going to happen. There's no snapping of the fingers anymore because of my fingers.
You wrote the wrong person. You wrote Chris Walsh instead of Chris Kringle.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And there is a difference. I know there is a difference, right? Yeah, absolutely. Doug, I want to get back to the cannabis in New Jersey world.
Sure. Okay?
It's now legal to have adult use and adult use dispensaries in New Jersey. How vibrant is the market? How competitive is it to get those licenses? And are you starting to see some more normalization of acceptance of the product in your backyard?
So I'll answer the last question first. Definitely starting to get more acceptance. I mean, we have Cure Leaf is sponsoring sports teams in town, and pretty much everybody around is just perfectly fine with it as long as you're not really consuming in front of children, which you shouldn't be anyway. And so it's definitely way more relaxed as far as competition. We have dispensaries popping up all over. Obviously, the big money corporations had the first dips at them because they had the money. It cost a lot, but people are starting to get into it a lot more. There's a couple of dispensaries has opened up. Actually, the town next to me just had a meeting last night, their zoning meeting, to have two more dispensaries. So they are popping up all around. And as soon as that happens, places like Cure Leaf, because I don't want to talk bad, but their product isn't the greatest. They've actually been, it's funny, in New Jersey, they don't really hold anybody to standards. If the state comes in and you're in violation, they just tell you to correct it. They've been in violation over a dozen times for selling moldy product, and they just can't get it right. And the problem is there, and I explained it from day one, and it's very busy. I live around the corner. There's a line around the door, and it's a corporation. They're more worried about turning over the money, and they do have a very fast turnover. And it's funny, it's called Cure Relief, and they totally don't cure it properly. It's the one thing that they do not do, and it leads to major issues. And it is what it is, but they're either going to have to get their act together real soon, or they're going to get phased out, even though they're very big. But people will stop going because their flour is just not up to par, to be honest.
Josh, and yet people line out the door in Florida for cookies that sells more in one store than the entire rest of the state for flour that I had in Nevada that was trash. I bought like an $80 blunt. And it was garbage, and people are just going because of the brand. And so yes and no, I think it kind of depends on if the brand can pull people in. There was a $30 ounce I bought on 420. I opened it up and I thought it was moldy, and I pulled out a microscope and it was spider mites. So that's still happening in Washington State. It's going to happen in other places. It's ridiculous. And eventually, I think the only thing that's going to really, weed these people out is legalization. I think they're going to stick around until they are truly forced out of business.
No, I can't disagree with that either, because they make so much money. Well, the money part, honestly, it depends, because like Cure Relief has multiple buildings, but people don't understand the cost of the operation. So you're talking a big corporation, and if they really wanted to do it right, they would cure it right. They would have a whole building just for curing and that whole process. But clearly the money is more important than the patients, and they make that choice. And I think as we go down the road and better places pop up and you have way more options and the price comes down a little bit, I think they either have to get it back together or they'll get phased out. But right now, like I said, they just kill it because of the location where it's at. They were one of the first, and they just have a big operation going on, so they can handle tons of people.
There's no home grow in New Jersey yet, correct?
No, you can't do anything like that.
What kind of standards or regulations? You said they come in, they inspect, and they just tell you, hey, get it right. They're not being fined, right?
Yeah, it's quite crazy. No, in New Jersey and a lot of the states, they just write these regulations and things, and no one really follows anything. It's just like if they want to fine them, they can. But around here, they just tell them, like, hey, you're not supposed to do that. And then they just do it again because nobody's really implementing anything. There's really no border. Like you heard Tara Massou. I mean, she even spoke at the convention, and she does a lot of great things in New Jersey. She was one of the first people. She helped write the regulations, and you heard her even say it's terrible. They need to get it up to date, and they really need people that understand, like herself, but they need more people like that can really get it together and make it right, where that the industry cracks down on these things and really does real testing. Because it's so crazy, if you can send the same product out to three different labs, you'll get three different results depending on what machines they use. So it's just very, very, it's a gray area and a big, big market. So
that, and I'm guessing that the legacy market is flourishing then in New Jersey.
Oh yeah, just definitely. I mean, the industry.
So how does somebody compete with a legal product versus the fact that if they know the legal product is produced by this group over here and the illegal product is produced by these guys over here, and it's less expensive and it doesn't have mold on it. To me,
honestly, the underground market is just as big, if not bigger, than the recreational dispensary market for that reason. The prices are crazy. It's like $60 for an eighth. They want to charge you like $60 for a half a gram for a cartridge. It's not even that great. And it's just crazy what they do. And of course, people go there because it's convenient or it's fun to go to a dispensary. But at the end of the day, you can't go spending $60 for an eighth and it's not that great. You're going to find it for $40 and, you know, and it's better. It's crazy. But like I said, as places start popping up, the dispensaries will get it together and grow better product and the prices will come down. It's just so new right now that it's just one of them things that happened in California and Colorado in the beginning. You know, you walked in and the prices are expensive and now you go out there and they're practically giving it to you. It's crazy. So it's just one of them things.
But you guys are both numbers guys. Okay. Mm-hmm. Not something those numbers go right over my the top of my head. But what we're watching is the open market, right? We're looking at supply and demand and then legal and illegal. Mm-hmm. And I have never found, look, if you've been using cannabis for 30 or 40 years, that whether it's legal or not is really not was never the thing that made you afraid to do it. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. You were doing it regardless. I honestly been using since I was 15. It was the only thing I realized that helped my allergies immediately. I wasn't a big drinker. I still don't drink ever. And I just don't like alcohol. It makes you feel like crap the next morning. You know, you're not productive and you're not in control. You're not getting in your car and driving home safely. So I just never liked it. And like I said, the cannabis helped my allergies. So I was like, wow, this is amazing. And yeah, never stopped. My whole thing when I was younger, I was like, man, am I going to stop this when I get older at some point and grow up? And then it started to become legal and I was like, this is so great. Like, this is
the you got to find a cannabis lounge or a cannabis cafe to start working at being a chef. Having the black market proliferate as much as it is, that a home grow, I'm assuming, as strong as it is, are they going to be able to go into a cannabis cafe and spark their own, or is it going to be this thing where you got to go to Curaleaf and buy theirs and go to their cafe? Are you keeping track of the cannabis cafe bills and how that's going to roll out?
Yeah, they're supposed to try to open one in Atlantic City. They're trying to thrive the cannabis industry just because the casino industry down there is just really hurt and they need money. They need any kind of income they can get.
It's funny because in Vegas they kick you out if you're smoking the blunts or whatever.
Well, you can't go inside the casino, but the town itself is welcoming as much cannabis activity. So they're trying to open a lounge down there. And as far as being strict about where you get your cannabis, no one really cares. You just basically pay whatever your cover is to get in and you're gonna consume, buy there, do whatever, and it is what it is. But Yeah, I don't think they're gonna be that concerned with where you exactly purchase it. No one really pays no mind. I mean, I have the medical card and nobody asks anything. Really.
Are they pretty open in New Jersey in terms of how you're going to make revenue? Because in Washington State, we've been fighting this uphill battle on trying to get that. And there's been lobbyists at like every step of the way, like anti-lobbyists and then the indoor smoking lobbyists, impaired driving or whatever, all these issues. But then when you get beyond regulatory stuff, you run into like standard business issues. Like, how do you make money? You know, like normal stuff. So, you know, we were going to do the membership model. It's a lot more conservative and that would just kind of open the doors. But Colorado, other places, they want to do just kind of the standard, like just business license model where you're just like a regular business. And kind of the Dutch coffee shop model where it's just social use, come in, do your thing, rather than this temporary license. It's a pop-up, you're here, you're gone, or for tourism. You know, these are for locals, kind of the heart and soul of the community by looking at, you know, these coffee shops and how benign they are will kind of really just allow for a lot more movement, I think. Where are you seeing the cannabis cafes? What's going to be your involvement and how can people make money?
Hey, we were at a cannabis cafe that night, that Saturday night, at least, you know, maybe not an official one, right?
Exactly. But, and I think you're going to start seeing them popping up and cannabis type parties. I mean, Kim has the 420 friendly rental house thing. I can't even think of what they're called, but she has that going on. Kim B. I mean, you just see so many other things rolling out in the cannabis industry and just expanding. And I always say to people doing it for a while, everyone just wants to have a dispensary. Like, they seem like the dispensary is like the end all be all. And to me, that was like the one thing I never wanted to have. It seems like there's so many regulations, laws, headaches, this, that. Yeah, they make money and it's great. There's a million ways to make actual money in the industry if you're smart about it. And you were saying that before, like, Josh, how do people make money? And yeah, it's a very flooded industry and people think they're going to walk in the industry and just make millions because it's a $1 billion industry. And they don't understand. It's cutthroat. You have to make a lot of connections. You have to get out there and talk to people, be at the conventions, and really, really, I mean, it's one of the industries, like, you really have to be out there hardcore. It's a new industry. There's a lot of opportunity, but it's a very tough industry. People don't understand that. And there's a lot of overhead because of all your licensings and regulations. And every time you turn around, they're hitting you with a fee for this, fee for that. It's just crazy. You know what I mean? They want to inspect this and it just gets crazy. So
I apologize if you guys just heard a Harley Davidson go by my apartment. It's okay if you didn't. The largest and oldest legacy operator in the town that I'm in is my next door neighbor, and he drives a Harley. I'm not going to name names here, but he's a great guy. All right, let's just say that. The Cannabis Cafe, guys, you know, and Josh, you mentioned Las Vegas. I do not believe that they are going to be operational in time for MJ BizCon in a couple of weeks. Am I right?
They're open. They have, the new Woo, I think, has been open for a couple of years, as a matter of fact. But even before, it was like, I don't know what the rules or regulations were. But now that it's open, there's at least three that I'm going to go and visit during MJ BizCon and do a little review on it.
Cool. Have you been to Planet 13?
Yes.
Yeah, that's quite the experience, so let's just say. And Doug, have you ever been out to MJ BizCon?
I have not been out there, actually. And I was supposed to go multiple times, and every time I'm supposed to go, something pops up where I have to go somewhere else. But it is what it is, and I'll definitely get out there because I know it's a great time.
It's overwhelming in many ways, but it is everything that the show Friday and Saturday was to the probably 100th degree.
I was going to say times a million, maybe.
Somewhere in between 100 and a million. Okay, yeah. How's that?
But it's just that atmosphere out there, and every show out there is like the Champ Show. You could break that Champ Show up into two different conventions because you just can't possibly even go through everybody. It's just insane. It's huge.
Can we talk a little bit about the Curate product?
Sure.
Because I know we actually have some B-roll that I shared with Dan that kind of had that booth that your products were at. Can we talk a little bit about how that is? And unfortunately, we're not going to be able to talk to Mimi, but
that's all right. I can speak for her.
I know you can. Tell me about that product, though.
So Curate, we developed, I'll tell you a long story short, how me and Mimi even began to meet. Now, Mimi actually has the very first trademark in the country for CBD. She was awarded for her Feeling Fine, Fabulous, her products, her healthcare line. And we basically did the white label for Be Relaxed. We did all that for them, and that's who we were helping out at the show that we saw, and we also had our products. But she's been in the industry forever, and she started out in the vape industry, and she was white labeling for some of the biggest companies that do the vape, the nicotine vape, throughout the country and the world. Mm-hmm. And so then that industry completely fell apart in New Jersey, and we had to pivot, and we had this opportunity. We actually looked into starting a testing lab. And because we have a state certified lab, it's one of the only ones in New Jersey.
Enforcing what they find in those labs?
No, you don't even need it. We realized that we didn't even need the lab to make anything. So we have this beautiful lab that's set up, and yeah, it's all good. We know everything's safe, so it's fine with us. And we have the ability to just make whatever we want. And when you do white labeling, people like to know that it's a nice, clean, safe lab. So it's not coming out of our kitchen, you know, so that's a big benefit. But yeah, so we were going to try to set up a testing lab, and in New Jersey, the walls just kept getting pushed back here, there, everywhere, and we were like, we're not going to invest all this money in the equipment and only be able to test hemp for like the next 3 years. It's probably not going to be profitable, so we held back on that. And that's when we had the opportunity, when D8, D10 started hitting the market. We said, hey, let's make a company. There's no reason why not. And so we were already pretty much doing everything that, you know, for other companies. So we had the ability, and then we just created that and just took it off running. We do all the trade shows, but our whole thing with the Curate is we try to make everything a medicinal purpose. Again, that's, we try to make the most high quality product, and it has to have a medicinal purpose. That's what we're all about, and just helping people. So, and Mimi got into the vape industry to help people with cigarettes. So, and ended up having to pivot into the CBD, and, you know, and she's made it work. I'll tell you what, she's one of the only vape shops. And now we made a health and wellness. We have a cafe, a cannabis corner. We have everything in that store and completely made it a health and wellness shop. And because a vape shop just doesn't work in New Jersey anymore. And but yeah, it's a beautiful building. It's an old bank from the 1900s. It's huge. It's 5,000 square foot retail shop. It's gorgeous. That's Riverside, New Jersey. But yeah, so that's how we got into everything. So the Curate, and then so the D8, the D10, THCO and HHC products, they were legal in New Jersey. So we just started producing them. And then we went as far as producing the battery that we use, our disposable cartridge. We changed all the air holes and the coils for each different distillate. And we made a no choke. That's, Mimi's a genius when it comes to that stuff. She loves the vape industry and just knows it inside and out. And literally, you can take our pack, our cartridge, and we do it at the conventions all the time. And I tell people, I open up a brand new one, hand them, and they pull as hard as you can, and you just blow out this beautiful smooth cloud, and people look at you like, yo, that's wild. That's never happened. And it took a lot of like experimenting, but we figured it out. And a lot of people try to white label them, but we refuse to do it just because the batteries are so hard to get now. If we had access to so much more product, it would be easier, but the material is just so limited anymore that we're not going to jeopardize not having material for us to do it for other big companies. So we do have the best battery, I can promise you that.
Is it a ceramic? Is it like, I know that the Jupiter C-cell was like the state of the art for the vape industry. And then until the entire vape world kind of came to a halt there for a while because people were doing it the wrong way. Mm-hmm. And it was a shame what was going on with that. But this is what's going to happen with the new industries, that they're going to be people that are always looking to cut corners. This is human nature, right? It's just that's because Delta 8 exists for a reason, right?
It's called greed, and greed is always going to be there. So just know that there's always people that are going to be taking shortcuts, like you said, and trying to just make product to put it out there as fast as possible to try to make a profit. And yeah, you have to just pay attention, consumer beware. You really have to do your research on products and know what you're buying. I mean, if you're going to a gas station and that's like your main supply, you're probably not getting the greatest product. You know what I mean? So it's just, you just have to know. And I know plenty of people that's where they go. It's cheaper. And I tell them, like, hey, there's a product for everybody. There's a high-end product and a low-end product. And that's why companies make them both.
Was that a knock on Florida getting their weed from gas stations?
That's too funny. Yeah, they just passed that. Oh, they're going to start opening dispensaries or selling weed in gas stations.
Circle K.
That's Circle. Yeah, Circles. That's what it's called, Circle K. I knew it was a Circle something. That's too funny. When does that start? It starts pretty soon, or next year. When does it start?
I don't know. It's going to be pretty wild, though. Like, it is. That's a huge distribution.
That's crazy. Going to get gas and then being able to just roll in. And
I think that's huge. Like CBD. Like I've worked with, or I've spoken with, you know, ex NFL players, and they've gotten into like the Walgreens, Rite Aid. They have the name, you know, whatever, but they, you know, they have the money, but they don't have the distribution. And I think it's seriously lacking in terms of priorities and how high it needs to be and how much of an impact it can have on your bottom line. And being in that that series of product SKUs for Circle K can make or break a company.
Absolutely. And like you said, a company has to be set up that they can just produce quality product and tons of it for something like that. Because if not, your product starts going down, they're going to drop you quick when people start buying it, because your product quality is just a little less than it used to be, because you're trying to make up the quality and distribute, you know, and the quantity. And so they're going to have to be very careful with, like, but it is, it's going to make big companies, it's going to make some companies huge, and they're going to do it right because they know the bottom line and the end of the road is going to be very, very prosperous.
Do you know the way that it's manufactured though? I've had some concerns about the THCO acetate and the Delta 9 and some of the acids and the way that it's washed. And, you know, we would talk about health and wellness and everything, and yet there's these methods that aren't necessarily ideal. Can you walk us through that?
I do understand the process. Our product, we deal with a lab out west, and it's just one lab that we deal with. We make sure we have the testing of the product when it comes in house, and then we test everything ourselves, and we make our product, and then we test it again just to make sure that everything is just what it said it was, what the company told us our distillate was to begin with, and then when our end result, because once you start making it and mixing it and heating it up, it just becomes a different element. So you have to make sure you're consistent and you still have that same distillate that you had when you brought it in the door after you made your product. So we test it 3 times before it gets out the door. And but as far as like the whole process, I don't know the entire process. I don't want to tell you something wrong. I understand it all right, but it's a pretty detailed process. And I just know that some companies can get it down right, where when you get it, the product tested, there's almost no trace of anything in it. And then I've seen companies that you get it and we haven't used the distillate. We had it tested prior to using it and they told us it was something else and it was a quality and it wasn't, and we weren't able to use it. So it happens. I mean, and so, yeah, I don't know exactly the full process, but absolutely some companies are way better at making it perfect than others. And I'm sure it costs more money and time to make it better.
Where are the buyers coming from? Because you have an online platform, right? They're able to go in there and buy it. Are they domestic? Are they international? Like where's the buyers coming from?
Well, we have, like I said, we have a retail shop. So we have foot traffic that generates there, and then we do all the conventions. So we used we're working with distribution as well, distributors, so we do get some online, but we do a lot of distribution as well, so we have traffic coming every which way.
And all right, hey, yeah. Look, hey Doug, this has been great because I love hearing what it's like in new states around the country. Every state is different. There's the little scuttlebutt in the room, Penny from, I think, I'm not quite sure, she's from Michigan, but she said, doesn't need testing. We don't need testing. We were doing legacy consumption for years. We don't need any more time. And I can't agree with her, because that actually makes me feel better when I walk into a dispensary, know that it's been tested and I know what I'm going to get. And I know that it's not going to have any mold in it because it is inspected. Or if there is a little mold in it, you can't find it. That's what I'm saying. But again, well, I'm talking from a medical dispensary card holder in Massachusetts.
Well, the other big thing with cannabis plant is when you grow it, it tends to suck up in the roots all the heavy metals in the soil. I know out west, a lot of wineries now rotate their crops with hemp to actually extract all the heavy metals and the contaminants in their soil and then go back to their grapes. Mm-hmm. So you also have to be careful of the contaminants in that nature as well. There's contaminants everywhere. And then you have growers that spray it with whatever insect repellents and this. It's just so crazy. You just never know. So Yeah, I mean, I believe in the testing. Like I said, sometimes you can send the same product to three different labs and get three different results. I like them to be pretty close to each other. If one's like way out in left field, I'm getting that product tested three more times because I want to know what's going on. But generally, they're all pretty much in the same ballpark. But like I said, you'll get different results and it's wild. But I do like the testing because I do want to know what's in it as much as
Exactly.
possible anyway.
Exactly. Hey, Doug Miller, thank you so much for showing up today
My
and
pleasure.
joining us. You're welcome any old time. And we're going to take our break here. And then on the other side, we're going to be joined by two media people, and we're going to talk about how media looks at the cannabis industry. So don't go away. Green Rush Live continues after this.
With that, we're going to roll this one up. I'm Josh Kincaid. This is The Talking Hedge. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe, or don't, and I'm out. Don't forget to smash that like button on your way out and check out these other videos that we've got.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
I'm Larry Mishkin. And I'd like to invite you to join Rob Hunt and me on our weekly podcast, The Deadhead Cannabis Show. Each week, we explore the latest cannabis and jam band news and reminisce with other deadheads and jam band lovers about the great musical acts that we've seen and heard. Check out a new episode every Monday.